This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome to Fourth Estate, a show about journalism. We're coming to you from Tiriciar in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. I'm Anthony Dockrell. In our first show for 2023, we are looking at a subject that has been on many people's minds, especially if you work in a vocation that uses words like journalism. That subject is AI, and in particular, ChatGPT. As ChatGPT has become more available for people to try, the results have caused alarm bells all over the world. If ChatGPT can write long-form copy in multiple styles, and at a standard many humans would struggle to achieve, are journalists about to go the way of the blacksmith? Or are we about to embark on a new era where journalists are set free from some of the more mundane and time-consuming parts of their job? To discuss this and more, we are joined by two humans well qualified to take us through what is shaping to be the biggest revolution since the personal computer or the invention of the internet. Dr. Sasha Moulatoris is a senior lecturer at UTS and in a previous life was a feature writer for the Sydney Morning Herald. Sasha is the author of Net Privacy, How We Can Be Free in an Age of Surveillance. And Charlie Lewis is the Tips and Murmur editor at Crikey. He also presents Spin Cycle on Triple R in Melbourne. Dr. Sasha Moulatoris and Charlie Lewis, welcome to Fourth Estate.
Thank you for having us.
Well, look, we've all seen the demonstrations, and I'm guessing you both have had time now to try out ChatGPT for yourself. Are we on the cusp of a revolution?
Oh, gee, I don't know. That's kind of an impossible question, isn't it? I think obviously, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot that's substantial that's going on, and then meanwhile, there's a lot that's just hype that's going on. So it's really hard to pull those two apart. You know, we've had some really interesting big stuff, particularly with ChatGPT late last year, you know, building on GPT-3 in 2020, I think it was. So this is a huge leap forward. Microsoft has made its, you know, many billion-dollar investment. Is it a revolution? I don't know. Time will tell, but it feels like a bit of a moment, doesn't it?
Yeah. Charlie, what do you think?
Well, I suppose, I mean, to the extent that there's a revolutionary element to this, it is one that's probably been ongoing for a while. We've had obviously a lot of huge leap forwards in artificial intelligence over the last year, not just in areas like ChatGPT and text-based, but obviously across areas like surveillance. I mean, you can go back to 1996 and have a computer beating a grandmaster at chess. So, I mean, to some extent, you know, this is a process that is sort of quite a long way it's quite a long way along the line. I think, you know, obviously, in terms of the concerns that we'll get into about something like ChatGPT, perhaps, as Sasha said, it's almost impossible to say how soon whether there'll be any kind of major cliff moment where it's an obvious before and after moment coming.
Yeah, and look, I'm interested to see what you both felt about this. Like, I had a very strong reaction when I started fiddling around with ChatGPT. It was not just scary in its ability, but it was also humbling, as you know, it shows what we think, something that makes us special. A lot of what we think makes us special is actually just mechanical assemblage and reducible to algorithms. Have humans just been taken down a peg?
Very true. Look, I had something of a similar reaction. I haven't spent too much time on it, and I don't want to help train the algorithm too much. So, you know, I have my concerns with it for a number of reasons that I'm sure we'll get into, but Yeah, I was actually strangely impressed with the quality of the content it produced. And it's not making anything, right? I mean, it's just not copying and pasting, but it's just like scanning the whole internet and regurgitating bits. So with that in mind, yeah, I was pretty impressed. So I typed in a couple of exam questions that I'd set in the second semester for some law exam. And the responses were surprisingly good. They're about, you know, the role of a particular type of ethics, virtue ethics, for lawyers, and how does that sit with their professional codes of conduct? So basically, how do ethical theories align, go with, and complement what they have to do professionally under their codes of conduct? Yeah, and the answers were surprising.
What marks did you give it?
Yeah, well, look, to be honest, I would have given it those answers good marks, you know, and I have to say, like, very good marks. And the reason, I think, is because there is good stuff on the internet about that sort of general question, right? So ChatGPT uses data collected up to about, mid-2021. The question that I just told you about is a very general question. It's been well answered online. I imagine there's a bit of a consensus online. Well, there seems to be. And the short answer is, yes, lawyers do need to supplement their professional codes of conduct with ethical theory, including virtue ethics. That to me is a good answer. You know, is it the only right answer? Perhaps not, but it's a very good answer, a sound answer. And ChatGPT just articulated it in a way that was, you know, about 300 words. It was very logical. It kind of set out the key issues. It gave a definition of virtue ethics, definition of professional codes of conduct. So just what you kind of teach a student to do. So yeah, it was definitely quite impressive.
Okay, well, let's jump into the big one. Will artificial intelligence like ChatGPT replace human journalists? You know, as editors turn to the technology for content creation and curation in the media industry. Charlie, you can jump in first on this one.
I mean, yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think, you know, in the setup as I understand it now, I mean, I don't think so, or at least not 100%, not en masse, because it does, as we sort of like, it doesn't know anything. It has no expertise as such. It just scans the internet and collates that into an article or an argument. And I do think, I mean, it's interesting. I was interested to hear, Sasha, that you thought that the quality of writing was really good, because the stuff I've seen, it's been passable, but I haven't seen much that's really, you know, I think Mumbrella did an experiment where they tried to get it to mimic various kind of high profile Australian journalists like Virginia Trioli and Alan Jones and people like that. And I wasn't actually that impressed with, like, say, its force of language, with its ability to forcefully and memorably kind of put forward an argument. I do agree that it definitely was able to put arguments together in a sort of clear and logical sense. And I suppose that in some ways is still just as much an attack on what journalists are supposed to be able to do. But in terms of, but going forward, you have to say that, of course, as it gets more and more sophisticated, and of course, it's not just ChatGPT. It's not just that. It's obviously, you know, Google Search and Microsoft Bing are both putting together AI chatbots for their search engines to help kind of summarize and deliver kind of summaries of the information that you're searching for. So that's going to be another sort of filter between the human being and the information that they get. So it is very worrying in that regard.
In response to, I don't think it will be good. And what I've seen isn't good in terms of, you know, writing the style of David Marr or whoever, you know, we're talking about. But, you know, that sort of clear logical writing, that was what I thought was quite impressive. Will it replace journalists? Certainly not in the short term. And, you know, we've come across a number of examples of inaccuracies, you know, and even I found inaccuracies. There are problems with the content it produces if we're measuring by accuracy, right? And we know that even from Google's own promo materials. So, you know, that's an issue for journalists. And yet we know that there are companies that are already using it and have committed to using at GPT as well as other AI to produce content in the short term. I think the Bragg here in Australia was one of the first to come out to say that, and some other companies have made similar comments that they will be exploring it, you know, looking into it. So what exactly that means, I'm not sure, and what sort of how much content they're going to allow.
Obviously, there are certain journalistic skills that an AI cannot replicate. I mean, it can't show up where it's not wanted and ask difficult questions. It can't make moral judgments in the same way as a human being can. And I think, that is important. But that's only important if you really care about a kind of a certain quality of journalism, a certain human quality of journalism. If you're only worried about content, then it can absolutely replace your workforce.
This technology is only going to get better. In the case of ChatGPT, there's a new version coming out soon. And, you know, it's already astoundingly good in limited ways. But let's assume that it does get better. You know, humans are expensive. We get sick. We take holidays. We don't answer work emails when we're sleeping. We also want to get paid more every year. If you were editors trying to cut costs, wouldn't you reach out to this technology?
Depends how kind of mercenary I am, right? How much I value people. Look, Charlie was raising this point about, all the things that journalists do, and it's not just the truth, but there are ethical judgments wrapped up in there. To me, what's important, you know, I work with the Center for Media Transition and you know, we're involved with, say, the News Media Bargaining Code and various aspects of journalism and regulation about journalism. And so we butt up against this issue of what is journalism all the time and what makes it valuable, right? And so to me, what makes journalism valuable is, well, not all journalism is valuable, right? What makes journalism valuable is the stuff about it that's in the public interest. So public interest journalism, quality journalism, right? And what makes it quality? It's the fact that people are taking into account ethics and they're making decisions in the pursuit of accuracy and fairness and balance, all these traditional journalistic qualities. Now, AI can't do that. AI has no idea about the concept of objectivity, which admittedly is a really contested concept, right? There's a really healthy, I think, debate going on in journalism about what does objectivity mean? Do we still value it? Should we still pursue it? What role does advocacy journalism have, right? These are really important questions about what the role of a journalist is and should be. Where does AI come into that? It doesn't. It just regurgitates content. It trawls the net and regurgitates what's already out there. So I guess to use AI like this in journalism can work from my point of view, but it needs to work with significant human oversight, you know, and with people and with editors. So to your question about, you know, if I were an editor, would I just employ AI? Well no, because I do think fundamentally that it's something that people do and can do and make ethical decisions, but I might employ it in a certain way to supplement what happens in the newsroom. If I think it's good enough, you know, perhaps it can do certain types of preliminary reports, you know, whether that's just financial figures or whatever it is that complements what humans do. And then what human journalists do will hopefully be the more sophisticated analysis and certainly comment pieces and all sorts of other journalism, feature writing. You know, who doesn't love a beautifully well-crafted feature? That would be my position as an editor.
Charlie?
Oh, I think I just completely agree with that, Sasha, on that, is that to the extent that it's useful as a research tool, then that could potentially be useful for a newsroom. But it does have to be done with a huge amount of human oversight. And also I'm equally enamored with, and I think it's a dying art anyway, which is really lovely, idiosyncratic human prose focused feature writing. It's already a bit of a dying art, particularly in Australia, and AI is in no position to kind of take over that.
Yeah, so it looks like we've got a consensus here that some jobs are definitely in trouble. Like if you're doing cut and paste journalism at the Daily Mail or producing listicles at BuzzFeed, you're probably not in a safe position. But quality journalism, investigative journalism sounds like it's actually quite secure. So in that setting, is AI actually a useful tool rather than a threat?
I would hope so. Yeah, I'd hope so. It's going to take a few years to play out. But yeah, hopefully it can be a useful tool for journalism, in the way that various aspects of technology have already become. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists has an office here at UTS in the Law Faculty, and they have done such amazing work, you know, with the Panama Papers and with all their other investigations. And that was all only possible because of digital technology and all the connections they could make with journalists all around the world. You know, so something like the Panama Papers, I think it was 70 countries, you know, 100 and something journalists in all these newsrooms collaborating over a year or more and working with this massive trove of documents that was leaked from the law firm in Panama. You know, and that is all made possible by tech that couldn't have happened in the old days. It was digital tech and communications that made that possible. In the same way, I think, you know, AI now will probably open up new doors for some types of journalism, perhaps maybe even ones we can't really foresee. But yeah, I do come back to that point that I think it's, you know, you said this yourself, Anthony. You put it well when you said that if we're talking about quality or investigative journalism, then it seems like ChatGPT is the person, so to speak, to do it. But then if we're talking about, you know, maybe more mundane tasks, you know, if we're talking about rip-off journalism, that's not something that I want to see promoted anyway. But, yeah, that could be duplicated by AI.
And I think, I mean, that does get to a little bit the fact that there is more than one threat to quality journalism in the kind of all over the world now. We mentioned BuzzFeed. They for quite a while did do quite very good political journalism, and then of course that all financial considerations kind of closed out. That wasn't AI that ever was going to threaten that kind of journalism.
I mean, one of the interesting things I read about this is that, you know, when the Industrial Revolution came along, it was difficult jobs that got replaced. So, you know, heavy jobs, technology came in and took those jobs away. Here we are looking at something that's going to take away the lower end, the lower skill jobs. We're talking about the less experienced and less important part of journalism is under threat. But, you know, everyone has to start somewhere. The many journalists who've started at BuzzFeed, as we know, who now have gone on to amazing things, it does seem that even if investigative journalism, high quality journalists are safe, it does seem to be baking in a problem for the industry.
Yeah, well, hopefully that doesn't come to pass the way you describe it. Hopefully there are always the jobs that journalists need to do in their first years in the room, you know, those kind of roles where you cut your teeth, you write a news story of 400 words that teaches you how to do it. And I don't know, maybe the AI can play a role in that training as well. You know, maybe those early years will be partly AI working together with young journalists. You know, there might be some sort of role for AI for training purposes. I don't know.
Now, look, one of the things about journalism that people don't really understand is that the copy comes last. You know, you get a lead, you make editorial judgments, you search out the story, you do a lot of hard work, you get your facts, you check your facts, you verify your sources, then you write your copy. And the facts is a really important part of journalism. ChatGPT, like all AI chatbots, has been shown to have a pretty checkered record when it comes to facts. You know, it's normally factual, but at the same time, it's been shown quite often to make stuff up. In the AI field, it's called an hallucination, where the bot just fills a gap in with something it's just sourced from somewhere else. Sasha, how worried should we be about the accuracy of these chatbots and their tendency to hallucinate?
It's really concerning. You know, accuracy is just absolutely one of your chief imperatives as a journalist. You know, you need to be accurate, right? And if you're not, then what are you doing? You know, you have to be accurate. You don't want to deceive your audience. You don't want to you want to be truthful with them, right? So it is concerning that AI, which just trawls the web and then will spit out what the web has on it, will necessarily give us a lot that is not true. And it won't signal what's true and what isn't. It's just all mixed together. And this word hallucination that you use describes when it produces something that is coherent and plausible, and if you happen to know and look a bit deeper, it turns out to be totally untrue. So this is, it's really concerning. One of my favourite journalists, when I used to work at the Sydney Morning Herald some time ago, I spent a little bit of time in reporting state politics. And there was the chief of the bureau at the time, I'd only been at the paper for a few months. So I was really sort of a sponge and just absorbing how everyone was working. And he was a really good journalist and always get really good stories. And just watching him work, he would spend all day just, you know, sort of going around, talking to people, listening, thinking, sitting in to the parliamentary sessions. He would write the story really quickly. Apparently there were quite a few mistakes in it, you know, grammatical mistakes and that sort of thing. And the subs would have to work some of the paragraphs around. But he just waited until the last possible minute, you know, pissing off a lot of the subs and others. But he would get a really good story because he got everything, you know, he could see the big picture. And so that's a completely different way. To me, that was excellent journalism, you know, like he got the grammar wrong sometimes, but he got the big picture right. And then there were checks and balances to fix up the grammar and, you know, that sort of stuff. Whereas the AI is working, it has a completely different methodology. It just, it looks at what's out there. And then it kind of draws on that to make a coherent slab of text.
I think
you can see the difference, right, Charlie?
Yes, absolutely. I think you can always tell the difference. And I think also it goes sort of a tangent from that is also a kind of approach like this kind of accelerates another very bad trend in journalism, which is the kind of not the death, but the kind of eroding of expertise and beats and areas that people have some personal expertise on that they reported on for a long time. Obviously, as we sort of said before, an AI doesn't know anything. It doesn't remember things happening. It doesn't have context in that same way. It doesn't assess those things based on that context and that knowledge it already has. It just trawls and spits out what appears to be on the face of it a coherent and plausible answer.
On that point, one of the most interesting things I read was from David Chalmers, who's an Australian philosopher, and he's a philosopher of mind. So, you know, he spends his days thinking about consciousness and these things. And he wrote in 2020 when GPT-3 came out, he said, look, does this thing have consciousness? Well, you know, I could possibly answer yes. Does it have intelligence? I could possibly answer yes. But it doesn't have understanding, you know, so that's where it still is. That is the kind of key difference at this stage. There is no understanding on no level.
But it fakes understanding at a level that is astounding at the same time. While you're talking about expertise, it actually makes a mockery of expertise because like it's you've got it writing an answer to a legal question. It can write about last night's episode of Married at First Sight. It can write some Java code and you can get it to write a movie script and anything in between. Expertise becomes almost nonsense.
Well, yes and no, because obviously it's still relying on information that has been put into the public domain, often by hopefully experts. Obviously, it's not just consulting the experts, is it? So that's the real issue with it. But that makes it, I suppose, in a way that kind of reinforces why the expertise is so important, because that's a big part of assessing the credibility and the usefulness of the information that you're interrogating.
That's a very important point, and it is something that we should dwell on. That these bots are relying on human input and human generation of facts and material, and this is where things can get very murky. That if humans stop producing as much of this stuff, and the web becomes largely produced by AI, where are we? I mean, I'm going into obviously a philosophical area where I'm guessing no one has an answer, but these are very important questions. Like humans are still very much part of this whole equation, and I guess we're debating about where do we stay in that equation, or do we take a step back?
Absolutely. If we just rely on this AI from this point forward, then kind of, you know, we've got the full stop on where we go as a civilization and as a people,
yeah. Right?
Because it's all the AI is just looking at what's there on the web already, and just, if you want to have new research and new journalism, you know, as the topic of today, we need people like Kate McClymont and all the other wonderful investigative journalists and all the great feature writers that we have to do something new, you know, to make us think in fresh ways, to reveal something that we didn't know before. You know, that's a powerful thing that journalists, among some other people, can do. And it's not going to happen from the AI.
When you were saying before about the Industrial Revolution and how that kind of removed all the difficult jobs, and it is funny and quite a melancholy thing to reflect on, that it's like, yeah, tech was supposed to make our lives easier and give us more time to kind of work on higher pursuits, and now it's just making sure that painters can't get jobs and that writers are going to become obsolete.
Well, let's turn to ChatGPT's politics. You know, officially it has no political views and does not engage with politics. But on a whole range of issues, it's been shown to be pro-environment and left-leaning, or that is how, you know, it has been perceived. You know, the alt-right have been complaining that, you know, that this particular chatbot is woke. But, you know, is it woke, or is it just a case of, you know, something that Stephen Colbert observed many, many years ago, that reality has a well-known liberal bias? Charlie?
I don't know if I'll go that far. I mean, what I would say is that, the makers of ChatGPT are very, very open about the fact that it has these moderation filters that steers it away from certain potentially dodgy topics. So there was a recent piece in the Daily Telegraph kind of whipping up a little bit of a culture war front on this one, which is saying that it's biased and woke, and that it would refuse, for example, to write a poem, an ode of praising George Pell. It said he's faced very serious accusations and it wouldn't be appropriate to do that. And that was kind of taken to be evidence that it was left-leaning and woke. I mean, the thing about those moderations is that it's sort of well documented in all AI that if you don't put filters like that in, you very soon start dealing with a racist, basically, when they scan all of social media and all of, like, there was a studies done by John Hopkins University and the Georgia Institute of Technology a year or two ago, and they basically tested these virtual AI robots and asked them to do things like scan blocks of people's faces and put the quote-unquote criminal in a box. And it would, you can probably guess the answer it always went with. It was always a black man's face. So if you don't put these things in, it starts to absorb. I mean, it goes back to what ChatGPT does. It takes all of the internet, and there's a lot of very nasty stuff on the internet. So it absorbs all the prejudices that are kind of baked into that process. So they've tried to, I guess, whether sometimes that does give you slightly absurd outcomes, is neither here nor there, really. That was sort of designed, I suppose, to counteract very well-known biases in the other direction that happens if you don't put those in. And actually, it does raise I won't go on too much longer, but it does raise another kind of real concern about something like AI taking a lot of young journalists' jobs, young journalists in particular, is that it accelerates, I think, quite a bad trait, a long-term trait in Australian journalism in particular, which is the lack of diversity. It means that you are now getting a circle of the white male university-educated, middle-aged bias of mainstream Australian journalism. I don't think anyone would say that I'm overstating that. That is now being circled back into the process, so that if you are producing it, producing AI based on that content, you then maintain that voice. And the AI process, kind of by preventing younger and more diverse voices getting involved, kind of, again, continues that spiral.
Yeah, look, I think that's a really important point, Charlie. I think about journalism and public interest journalism and ethics of journalism, that point just keeps coming back to me, or comes to me in a kind of stronger and stronger sense that the way to make our journalism ecosystem healthier and better and more in the public interest is to improve the diversity, make journalism more reflective of what Australia is, you know, in terms of Indigenous, in terms of class, you know, socioeconomic background and so on. And you know, in Australia, sure, things have been getting better, but they're not great, and it needs to be better. And there's a problem that, yeah, if we go to this AI, we get stuck. We get stuck where we are. We get reflected back to us what already exists, instead of kind of working forward towards a better journalism ecosystem. And to your earlier point about choices and about wokeness, you know, and about what is kind of being given as content by AI, you know, there are always decisions that need to be made in terms of, once we accept the basic premise that, okay, there are some things we don't want to use to train this AI, you know, And I think that's a very fairly elementary and simple position. It's a good position to take, right? It's really important that we don't give it really hateful, really racist, really sexist, really problematic content because it's socially destructive, right? We can just put this to the side and say, no, we're not going to let the AI be trained by that stuff. We're not going to have it scan that. But once we've made that decision that some content is going to be off limits for it to scan, then it becomes very hard to decide, okay, what is off limits and what isn't? Like, that's always just tricky. And, you know, whether the people who have programmed this have got it right, I don't know. I certainly, you know, I don't know. But these choices need to be made. One interesting kind of side note here is that, you know, there are a whole number of ethical issues to do with this. One is, how was this AI trained? You know, and I have read about some of the moderators who were employed in countries, in places, including in Africa, paid very little, and were exposed to all sorts of content, including really traumatic content, as in to say, look, that's something that we need to keep away from this AI as we train it. So, you know, these are sometimes some of the hidden kind of issues going to the training of the AI, the making of it, that that I think we should be thinking about too. You know, we shouldn't forget the people who kind of get exploited along the way.
Yeah, and look, it strikes me, you know, as always, we get sidetracked by something that isn't the real issue. So it's not a real issue that this chatbot won't say racist slurs and that, you know, it won't engage in culture wars. But the fact that it also locks off politics and won't have political views, in a sense, makes it kind of useless to the realm of journalism, because even if you're, you know, working at a media organisation that's trying to be fair and balanced about the news is political. Politics is the news. So it does seem that in this particular instance that they might actually be making this particular chatbot useless to the media. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, and that's an interesting one. Again, I suppose it does come down to what you want to use it for. And that's, again, what at the moment is kind of slightly clunky about the writing that sometimes is produced by a chatbot like this, is that it does a lot of the kind of essay sort of caveats, where it says, well, some people would argue it's this and some people would argue it's that. I mean, you're right. I mean, that again, it does really come down to a bit of a fundamental question about what journalism is for and what the role it's supposed to play for its consumers is. I for one, am quite comfortable with a publication, within reason, the publication having an obvious political framework within it, which it operates, and that's how it interprets and interrogates government policy, is through a more conservative or a more left-wing view. I've got no problem with that, as long as that is up front. And usually, if you read anything for long enough, you'll be able to pick up on it anyway. So I suppose in terms of, and as you say, even in the process of saying, I want this to be a completely apolitical platform, you are making a political judgment by what you define as apolitical. So it's sort of, to the extent it's not useless, it's probably kind of impossible to properly put in place.
Okay. Well, look, let's end talking about education and journalism. Sasha, you know, are journalism schools preparing their students to work with AI?
Too early to tell, yep. I'd say. I haven't had many conversations with my colleagues about that. I live physically in the law faculty, so I'm attached to law, and I've certainly had a lot of conversations, informal conversations with colleagues about ChatGPT, just in terms of education. You know, as I said before, about, you know, its ability to generate essays or exam answers, that sort of thing. You know, that's something we really need to think about. And part of that is really worrying, and part of that is really good, because, you know, we need, as educators, to keep, you can't just sort of, you know, keep doing things the way you've been doing them because that's how you've been doing them. And there are real problems. I have real issues with grading students and the whole sort of grading marking kind of enterprise anyway. So look, I think it's, you know, in some ways it's kind of good that AI comes along and shakes up the way we do things to some extent. As to what's happening in the journalism school specifically, I think that's going to take a bit of time. But, you know, it's such early days. I need to have more conversations with my colleagues there still to work out what's going to happen. But they won't be able to ignore it.
A lot of the chat at the moment is about cheating, and it's about, you know, people using AI to cheat. Is anyone talking about students working with AI together? Because that's what's probably going to happen when they go into the workplace.
Yes, that's a really good point. And I saw a good thread on Twitter yesterday. I'd give the person who wrote it credit, but I can't remember who it was just off the top of my head. And she, she was talking everyone through how she has dealt with ChatGPT in the classroom. And hers was a writing course, I think, you know, not specifically journalism, but more writing. And, you know, they did exercises with ChatGPT. They talked about how it works, what its strengths are, what it might be used for productively, what it should definitely not be used for, you know, what's ethical, what's unethical. So, I think, you know, my approach as a teacher, as a tertiary teacher, my approach tends to be, look, let's be open about this. Let's not pretend ChatGPT doesn't exist. You know, there's part of me that doesn't want to tell people that story that I told at the outset about how good that exam answer was, right? But there's definitely a part of me that doesn't want anyone to know that that happened. But, you know, then the other part of me tends to win, and it's like, no, look, let's have that conversation. Let's tell people this is what it can do. It's actually quite powerful. And so we all need to think together about, okay, what does that mean for education? What does that mean for assessments, for cheating? And then what will it mean for the journalism industry, what we were talking about before? You know, how can we use this technology and whatever it sort of grows into in a way that enriches us all? And that sounds like a kind of trite, cliche thing to say, but that's what we want, right? We want this technology to make our lives better.
Dr. Sasha Molitoris and Charlie Lewis, thanks for being on Fourth Estate. And thanks for listening to the program. This edition was recorded at the studios of 2SER and heard across the country on the Community Radio Network. Fourth Estate is produced with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Thanks to the Foundation for their continuing support. And make sure you subscribe to Fourth Estate on your favourite podcast app so you can hear us talk about media, politics, and a lot in between. We'll be back for more next week, but in the meantime, you can stay in touch with us on Twitter. Our handle is FourthEstateAU. This program was produced by myself with a little bit of help from ChatGPT. I'm Anthony Dockrell. Thanks for listening.